How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Thursday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Another busy show for all of you. We're going to look back at the East play-in with a quick look ahead at what is still to come in the play-in tournament before the playoffs tip off on Saturday. We are going to be looking at a real frustrating loss for the Toronto Blue Jays yesterday after a chance to sweep the New York Yankees. Plus, the UFC pound-for-pound rankings have changed following UFC 300, so we will be looking at that. And AEW had their go-home edition of Dynamite, so a lot to cover on this show today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Let's get to the basketball. So, the final teams in the play-in are set. Let's go over the East play-in yesterday. First, it was the Philadelphia 76ers with a victory over the Miami Heat. And I will be honest, when I made my pick yesterday of the Miami Heat as an underdog play at plus 180, I was feeling pretty good about things around the second quarter when everyone is knocking down shots from three and they are just absolutely raining hellfire down on the Philadelphia 76ers. What I did not foolishly anticipate was that this was going to be the Nicholas Batum game and that all of my hopes and dreams would come crashing down because of Nicholas Batum, who had an unbelievable game for the Philadelphia 76ers. But this is why when they made the trades that they made with Harden going out and bringing some of those veteran pieces in, I think that they were anticipating maybe packaging a few of them together and being able to go out and get somebody. But those were live bodies that they brought in. And you see that. Not that you can expect 20-5 from Nicholas Batum going forward. It might be the opposite. 5 in 20 minutes for him the rest of the playoffs. But he got them into that matchup with the New York Knicks. Embiid was good down the stretch as well. Like, it didn't seem like there was a whole lot lingering. He didn't dominate this game in a way that you would assume that maybe he could be able to at times. But it was Batum's play that really helped kind of guide this ship and get them back on track. Maxey is so quick at getting to the rim. This is a really intriguing Philadelphia 76ers team. And I think if you're looking at it from a Knicks standpoint, this was not Philadelphia in capital letters, like, oh man, Joel Embiid beastin', watch out for this guy. Maxey's flying around, Heald's knocking down threes. Like, you're going to assume you're not going to get Nicholas Batumed, but I do also think that you worry a little bit, like, man, this team got here and they didn't have a great Embiid game and Maxey was just fine. This has to be, like, this is going to be an intriguing matchup, but that we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves right now. I think that this is, it's such a weird game to break down, but obviously, like, you feel positive coming out of it if you're Philadelphia because they fucking won. But also, like I said, Embiid didn't look hampered or anything like that. They are still figuring a few things out with this team and how everyone fits into it. But overall, I think you saw a lot of what you wanted to see, and I think you can kind of explain away a lot of what Miami did and just, oh, they just hit a ton of threes. That's not necessarily the game for the New York Knicks going into that 2-7 matchup. So I think you feel fine about that. From a Miami standpoint, this one's tough. It now sounds like Jimmy Butler is going to be out for Friday's game against Chicago, and that's not insignificant. And this is why Miami can just turn it on. It'll be fine. Dude's played a lot of basketball over the last few seasons, right? He was exhausted at the end of the bubble. They go to the finals again last season. He has played just a ton of basketball. And if you have to rely on play-in and then playing your ass off against the one, if you advance past that, then I guess the four and then the two at the end of everything, That's a really, really hard path, and you have to play some really hard basketball. Sometimes it's nice if you can just get in as the one seed and have an easy first round series. And I think all these hard miles kind of catching up on the Miami Heat a little bit. Now, I'm not going to do what I did last year after Miami lost a 7-8 game and pronounce this team dead and say this should blow everything up, but I am going to say, like, this is why you don't just, okay, well, they can flip the switch, and even if they have to get through the play-in, they have to get through the play-in, because weird things like this can happen, and now, all of a sudden, I don't know if they get past Chicago without a Jimmy Butler, but everyone else looked all right. Like, Hero was raining them down from three, Hawkes looked really, really good, and defensively, they did fine against everyone not named Nicholas Batum. It's just a player on the other team got hot. I don't think that there is a whole lot that you can take away from this. One thing that's frustrating, at the end, Miami trying to set up the perfect shot down four. Like, I get you have to make the first one, but Hero gets that bucket in with 0.3 seconds left. You're not doing a fucking thing with 0.3 seconds left. Even if you somehow get the steal, you can't get it up in time or call timeout in time or anything like that. And so Hero, with the pump fake, sidestep, hitting the three, that's a great shot with 8 minutes left in the game. When your season, not your season on the line, but when you have a chance to, like, hang around in this game, and it's technically a postseason game, and you mess around so you only get one shot of a situation instead of two, that was really frustrating, and a rare mistake for an Eric Spoelstra coach team. So what's next for these two groups? Well, you have the 76ers going up against the Knicks, and New York provides an interesting matchup, because we have seen in the past, with the guy who's coaching Embiid now, that OG Anunoby is going to, at times, defend Joel Embiid. And he has done that to relative success, I would say. There's only so much you can do against a guy who's a beast like that and an MVP winner. But there has been some success there when Toronto would do that. You have a couple of bigs with, like, no Mitchell Robinson sucks. No Julius Randle obviously sucks. But with Hartenstein out there and those guys, I think you can piece together some center minutes to throw at Embiid. And so I think the thing is, from a Philadelphia standpoint, I don't know if they have anyone to slow down Jalen Brunson. And so the key to me is, obviously, I think Embiid, if he is healthy, he's going to be the best player out on the floor. New York probably has the second best player. Philly is going to need Maxey and Hield to be, I think, players 3 and 4 in this series if they're going to have any chance of winning this. When the Knicks took the 2 seed, I think this was obviously probably their worst-case scenario, is that Embiid looks good, and now you're going to go into a matchup with them. The thing for the Knicks is that their home court is legitimately a home court advantage, and so I think they can take some solace in that. I do still think the Knicks take it, but this is not an easy series like it would have been if they would have dropped to the 3 and faced the Indiana Pacers. But this is also the type of a series that allows you to grow. And the Knicks aren't looking for just an easy path. That's not the Tibbs way. That's not how this team identity has been built. But this is also a team that needs these type of battles, this type of playoff experience to grow from and kind of develop into this team that they are looking to become. So I, from a Knicks standpoint, I think that this is a really good challenge. For Philadelphia, I think, like, that you'd rather this one than Boston, that's for sure. And I think when you, like, the Brunson part of it is going to be really difficult for them to, the Brunson part of it is going to be really difficult for them to kind of get through. But I do think that they're, like, the ish, what the Knicks can throw at Embiid is going to be, I think, interesting at times, but I think they're going to be able to work their way through that. It's just, can Maxey kind of step up now in this matchup? As far as the Heat, they'll be taking on the Chicago Bulls. There isn't a whole lot to say about the Bulls-Hawks game. The Bulls just beat the shit out of them. With no Jimmy Butler, Tyler Herro is going to need to step up in a big-time offensive way and kind of lead this charge, because we saw when the Bulls get rolling, they can put the ball in the hoop. Now Caruso gets banged up in that game, so that's going to be, I think, fascinating to see how the Bulls handle that. But all of a sudden now, DeMar DeRozan's the best player in this game. And Vucevic was hitting a couple of shots for the Bulls there. The Butler injury makes Chicago a real live dog in this one. And boy, the Boston Celtics must just be cackling at the situation they are going to have, whether it is a banged up Miami Heat team or just a bad Chicago Bulls team. It sets up really well. And for the Hawks, Trae Young was, I thought, dreadful in this game. He was handling this like it was a Tuesday night against Charlotte. Behind the back pass that late in the clock does not allow Murray to get a shot away because it's a little bit off target. A lazy ole on, I forget who it was, down the right sideline before time expired, allowing the Bulls to get a good shot away. Like, he's just... He is not a championship player. I genuinely believe that now. I don't think that you can build championship roster around this guy. He's a fine two and a real high level three, but he's not a one. And I think the thing with him and Murray hasn't really worked. Like, honestly, if you are looking at this soberly from an Atlanta standpoint, it's probably time to blow it up. And I think you look at trading everyone. I don't think anyone on this team is untouchable. Like, that was abysmal last night. See, won 36 games this year. And that is how they closed the season. What an awful team. What an awful performance. They are just lucky that everyone behind them also sucks. Like, I got the Raptor jersey here. They're lucky that team just folded up and gave up. They're lucky that Brooklyn didn't have a whole lot. Because this is a bad, 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 bad basketball team. And they are a long way away from working their way even to being average. And I just don't think you can do that with Trae Young. I was so... So out on that team watching that game last night. Okay, that is the rant on basketball, apparently. Let's get into some baseball talk as the Blue Jays falter last night against the Yankees. So the Toronto Blue Jays' push to sweep the Yankees did not necessarily go all that well, as they fell in the series finale to New York, 6-4 the final score, after a 4-run ninth inning. Toronto had a 4-1 lead at one point, then Juan Soto went bang, and Giancarlo Stanton went bang. And then Aaron Judge, powered by jinxes everywhere, comes up with his first hit of the series with the bases loaded. That ends up giving the Yankees the win. There is a lot of talk in this one about frustration around John Schneider. It does seem like his hands were tied. And I am the first to kind of call out how frustrating this guy can be with his bullpen management. But I think he was able to get a lot out of these guys. Jimmy Garcia was unavailable because he pitched in the first two games of the series. Jordan Romano was unavailable because he had pitched the day before, and they aren't going to be doing that guy on back-to-backs for a little bit. And Chad Green apparently had a bit of a shoulder pinch that was causing a problem for him. And so when you're looking at high leverage guys, it's Meza and it's Swanson. And so while you can get frustrated at the utilization of the bullpen for Schneider, I think this one is on the execution of the players. And Tim Meza looks... spooked right now. That was awful. And when he before Judge, when he walks Soto, he looks to the dugout like, you guys come, are you coming, can you get me? Excuse me. Like, Bill Simmons calls himself the body language doctor. That would get a real bad diagnosis from the body language doctor. I'll say that was atrocious. That, like, Meza just looked beat out there, and he's had trouble getting that velocity up, and the pitch that Judge hit, I believe, was at 91 and ripped down the third base line. And then, like, with Swanson, like, yes, it is maybe asking a little bit much to throw that guy in the ninth inning against the Yankees in a 2-run game as your introduction to Major League Baseball this season. That being said, if he's on the roster, then he should be capable of doing that. Like, you are assuming when you have your guy in the starting lineup, then your guy is the guy. And, like, he is him. So I'm going to use him as him. I'm not going to bring in Jordan Romano in the third inning like it's a spring training game. I'm going to assume he's fine. And so while Schneider has mismanaged the bullpen in the past, I don't think this one is on him necessarily. I think it shows, I don't even want to say it shows a lack of depth among the bullpen, because when everyone's on, like Romano, Garcia, Green, Meza, and Swanson is really, 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 really good group. It's just Meza's not on right now. Three of the guys were banged up, and that was Swanson's first game. If anything, maybe they could have worked him in a little bit earlier, but it was just one of those days where it didn't really work. And look, it almost, the Jays almost got through There was a couple of times there, Vladdy, I think specifically, I think it was Vladdy who ripped that one. There was second and third early in the ball game, and he rips one to third, and Cabrera makes a really nice leaping play. And then in the ninth, you don't love that Vladdy is hitting it up the middle on the ground, but that one looks like it's getting through, and Volpe makes a really good play at shortstop to dive, get the play, and get Guerrero out to end the ballgame. That one's a hit most of the time. So this one, to me, is just one of those, like, yeah, it would have been great. But I think you can come away with this one thinking, like, this Blue Jays team has hung around here a little bit with the Yankees. And while there, I think, is some smoke and mirrors with how Toronto has put up some of their runs this year, it's nice to see Biggio is on. And it's nice to see Kirk hitting an extra base hit. Varsho is locked in right now. And I do think Vlad is as well. Bo still needs to come around. That trip he had with the bases loaded, and it's a sac fly, so a run comes in. But you just would have liked, again, it's just the at-bats aren't competitive with him right now. But overall, a good series for the Blue Jays. They take two out of three from the Yankees, and now they head off on a seven-game road trip to take on the San Diego Padres. But that Yankee team's really good. The other note from that game is Kevin Gausman still didn't have his A stuff, but he battled with his B stuff a whole lot better than he has in the past. And it was a grind for him, but that is the sign, I think, that he is kind of coming out of this thing. All right, that's going to do it for that. Now let's get into some UFC talk. UFC 300 went down last weekend, and with that, we had some epic performances, which means we have a couple shifts in our MMA pound-for-pound rankings. So let's look at it. UFC 300 is in the books, and with it, a couple historic performances. So, how do the rankings change for the UFC? Looking at the men's pound-for-pound rankings right now, I looked at the all-time rankings. I just couldn't get Holloway into my top 10. Just to recap, my top 10, GSP, Jon Jones, Anderson Silva, Fedor, Daniel Cormier, Khabib, Demetrius Johnson, Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo, and Alex Volkanovski. I just can't put Holloway above those guys based off of this one. But he does get back into my pound-for-pound top 10. I have him at number 10. He leapfrogs Israel Adesanya, who I had hanging on there based on the resume. He is out. Coming in at 10 is actually Pantoja, who I bumped down a spot. At 9, it is Max Holloway, who goes from being not ranked to back into the top 10. After that, it is Alex Volkanovski coming in at number 8. At 7, it is Ilia Topuria. So that sets up a really intriguing match of 2 pound-for-pound guys potentially facing off in a stadium, which is what they should do, and going from there. But someone I think is definitely rising up after that. At 6, it is Dricus du Plessis. At 5, we have Sean O'Malley. At 4, it is Jon Jones. At 3, it's Leon Edwards. I already had Alex Pereira at 2, so I just couldn't have him leapfrog our number 1, who is Islam Makhachev. Again, when you have 2 fights against the guy who is the pound-for-pound number 2 in the world, and you beat him in both, it's tough to knock that guy off. So if Pereira goes off and wins a fight at heavyweight, which, by the way, again, I cannot stress this enough, he should get, then maybe he moves up in these rankings a little bit. And honestly, looking at these, maybe I have Dricus du Plessis a little high. On a sober second thought, maybe he could move down a couple of spots behind Topuria, Volkanovski, and Holloway. And maybe that gets Max up a little bit more, but I also wonder if maybe I'm just living in the moment a little bit too much based off of that. But, so yeah, a bit of movement there as Israel Adesanya drops out of the, UFC pound for pound rankings right now. And Max Holloway makes his return to the top 10 as he comes in at number 9. We're going to have a full fights to make following UFC 300 coming up on the show tomorrow, so get ready for that one. We're also going to have a full AEW preview, but let's look at how they head into the weekend with a breakdown of Dynamite. AEW wrapped up their Dynamite schedule leading into Dynasty with their show from Indiana last night. Jon Moxley gets the party started with, I thought, a really good promo. And it's just, there's something about his delivery and the way he carries himself and the trust that he has built in his audience that is just different from anyone else who is out there. And it is just such a different feel to anything else in wrestling, what this guy is doing right now. And so that intrigues me a little bit with him. And I think this IWGP, Heavyweight Championship win, coming out of nowhere, kind of. Like, I don't view their American shows as shows that impact Japanese stuff too much. But now he's got the big belt. Still a bad belt, by the way. But he's got the big belt. And that opens up so many different things. And I think gives a bit of a shot to the arm that New Japan has been looking for a little bit. Like, Sonata was a real interesting champion, and as a wrestler, he was a fine champion, but it just, none of his matches felt big time. Naito, I don't think is on that level as of right now, but Moxley absolutely is. And so, you don't need him on the road twos. If he can go over there once, twice a month, or once a month for a couple of shows, and help out on the big shows, I don't see why this can't work for a while. And he is obviously a favorite among the Japanese audience. His character fits over there really, really well. But that character works in every wrestling promotion of all time. Just an amazing performer in the world of pro wrestling right now is Jon Moxley. Up next, we have Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale against Brody King and Julia Hart. Before the match starts, we see Willow Nightingale has been attacked in the back. Then the lights go out. What? And Julia Hart is up on the stage laughing as Brody King jumps Adam Copeland from behind. And so the story of this match is quite obvious. Adam Copeland's getting the hell beat out of him. Brody King had the fun spot where he sits him up in the chair and then hits a diving crossbody on the floor. This dude is huge. And they have done, I think, probably the best job of all the big guys who they have tried to build up as big guys. They've done the best job with this big guy to build that up and then sustain it. The best job they did of building it up was with Wardlow, but they have not been able to sustain that at all. And now they're trying with Will Hobbs and various results on that one. But they have something here in this big guy in Brody King. The match is going on, and then eventually Willow comes out with bright blue K-tape on and comes in, hits a crossbody on Brody, and also hits a cannonball on him as well. But then Julia Hart, with the referee's back turn, hits Willow in the head with the steel chain and locks her submission hold on. Willow is obviously unconscious, and so that is that. This was a fine match. This wasn't a blowaway. And nothing really... Well, I guess the main event was pretty... There's a couple good matches on the show. I shouldn't say that. But this one was definitely more about setting things up. I don't think it really makes me want to watch that six-man tag any more than I did before with Adam Copeland, Mark Briscoe, and Eddie Kingston against the House of Black. The story has been Adam Copeland just does not like them because they keep hitting him. And so that's a problem. But it gets Adam Copeland on the show, I suppose. I think they've done a pretty good job with Willow and Julia Hart in this, as they have a championship match coming up on Sunday. And Mercedes Moné has already said she wants the winner of that bout in Vegas at Double or Nothing coming up at the end of May. And so I think that they're... That when you have someone who is doing that, like what we saw with WWE, when the women's Elimination Chamber was going on, Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch are starting a feud. Okay, well, I think we know where they're going to go here. But with this one, she has been jumped by Julia Hart, and she has obvious history with Willow Nightingale, and she has teased it with both of them. So it's not obvious who she is going to be facing coming out of Sunday, and so I think they've done a good job with that one. Then it was the Elite against Garcia, Penta, and Pac. This was fun. Like, all of these guys are really talented performers, obviously. I don't think it did anything to advance things going into Sunday or anything like that. They mess around a little bit. There was going to be a video package playing, and the Young Bucks are like, this is boring, we don't need to see this, and just go on. I thought there needed to be a bit of an FTR retaliation to that, because it was just like, yeah, the history doesn't matter, we don't care, let's go to the match. And I thought there needed to be one more note of, no, we beat you in the last one, and we're going to beat you in this one, and it's a ladder match, and it's going to be crazy, and we're going to pull out all the stops, and this is to finally decide who the best tag team of this era is, even though I thought we decided that the last time. But still, it's not like they haven't rehashed things before. We'll get to that at the end of the show. But I thought there just needed to be one more thing from FTR on this particular program to really set this one over the top. But like, the match on Sunday is going to be incredible. There was a post-match beatdown, and it looked like they were going to do some type of move to Danny Garcia in the ladder, and Pac came running in with the ring bell hammer and chased them all away. So Pac against Okada is going to be an unbelievable match, but it does feel kind of secondary right now, and that is an issue that I've had with the Okada build so far. Putting him with the Elite is interesting and fun. Having him start out as the Continental Champion, I do think kind of elevates the Continental Championship a little bit. However, it does also make Okada feel very secondary right now. Like, he is obviously, with the charisma and his wrestling ability, one of the greatest wrestlers, not only of this generation, but of all time. That being said, right now he feels mid-card. And that is because he's in the mid-card. And the issue with that with AEW now is, before, if you had a guy in the mid-card for your pay-per-view, you had 4 months to the next pay-per-view, you could build that person up into a legitimate challenger. This time, they got another one in a month, and then another one in a month after that. And so this build into getting him, I think, to that main event level, like, it shouldn't be hard. He's awesome. But it's a little bit different for them right now. And I know a lot of AEW booking stuff has been torn to shreds lately, but when you do watch this with a bit of an analytical eye, you do kind of see, like, well, you know, I wish there was more of that, and, well, I wish there was a bit more of that, and, you know, like, it is not perfect right now, and it is frustrating. And with this one, too, because the CM Punk stuff was so centered in all of it, I thought they needed to do something on this show to get away from that. And they didn't. There was barely any build to this one at all. And with that CM Punk thing, a lot of people were going with 2000s WCW. And Tony Schiavone addressed his, like, look on the broadcast, saying, like, dummies, I'm in character. Like, I am a character on a television show. And so that is how my character would react to the Young Bucks characters pulling that bullshit. Which is a fine explanation, and one that I will buy. Again, like, I do think there's a lot of comparisons to 2000s WCW, but someone made an interesting point. This does feel a little bit TNA right now, where, A, you don't, like, nothing is allowed to breathe. It is just, okay, this thing happened. Wow, that's crazy. Anyway, let's go to the back, and here's this, and all right, let's go to this, and all right, like, it's just, nothing has time to set in, and they're throwing a lot of stuff at you, and none of it really connects emotionally. But still, the wrestling's amazing, and you have enough talent on the roster that it's like, hey, this should be doing better than it is. But then you have enough on the show where it's like, how is this even doing as well as it is? So, look, I want AEW to go well. I know I have a WWE belt in the background, but I have never been an AEW hater. I have loved so much of what AEW has done. And the fact that they are providing jobs to all these guys has been an absolute blast and such a positive to the wrestling industry. I just want it to be a little bit better. That's all. Then it is Jericho, Hook, and Taz in their segment. I thought this was a good segment. You make Taz a sympathetic figure, which is tough to do from the former human suplex machine. And to show the respect that I have for Taz and the level of badassery that I think is resonating deep in this man, I was expecting him to choke Jericho out at some point. I was expecting the Taz mission to get locked in. And maybe we still get a Taz mission on Jericho at some point, but I was expecting that. And it never came. You just get Jericho pushing Taz down, and then they're like, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but Taz has had some knee issues. I feel like we should have known that if we were making this guy the sympathetic figure on this. And now that they're starting to play it up a little bit, so that will continue on. But I thought that probably could have been mentioned a little bit instead of just Jericho pushed down an old guy who's still really tough. And then Hook gets in Jericho's face. It was good. I thought it could have had just a little bit extra, like, snarl to it. So I'm assuming that this match is just the first match that we are getting with these guys in a line of them, and eventually that attitude will be there. But I just thought we could have got a little bit more from Hook in that spot. Up next, Mariah May taking on Deonna Purrazzo. One thing I said coming into the show is I wanted any explanation on the Mina Shirakawa stuff, and unless I missed it in commentary, there wasn't any. It just, we went on with her being the Toni Storm lookalike, and she had a match, and then Thunder Rosa ran down after Toni Storm got involved and stuff, and that was it. And so this is another thing, like poking holes in the AEW stuff right now. There's a lot of, like, angles. There's not a lot of stories involved in these. Like, all right, we're going to set this up by this person running in on this one and this person running in on that. And that's the story. It's like, well, no, it's not the story. That's an angle, but what's the story here? So I feel like, just again, a couple tweaks that could be made. But again, this match is probably going to be pretty good coming up on Sunday. Orange Cassidy against Shane Taylor. This was a good match. I am not a Shane Taylor guy at all, but Orange Cassidy got a good match out of this guy. It was all just a backdrop for after a post-match beatdown, and Trent comes down and stops people from helping Orange Cassidy out. So that story is kind of continuing, and I'm intrigued to see it. And I think they could get some real violence out of these matches here. And that's going to be quite the story, I think. Because that will be an actual story. And the build to this has been, I think, quite intriguing. And I think there are some layers to this one now that these guys can really get us to. Then in the main event, it was Ospreay and Claudio. They had a phenomenal match. Like, these two guys just don't miss. A bit of an awkward head scissor spot at some point, but that, those things are going to happen. This was a good match. My one critique here, and I know I'm being hard on AEW today, but I just want them to do so well. They were hyping this as Ospreay against Danielson to decide who the best wrestler in the world is. I hate that. A, we just did that with Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. not long ago. And so I feel like we're just kind of retreading it. Again, in place of a story, it's just, oh, these guys are really good. We'll see who's the best coming up on Sunday. Which is fine, except that's what your world title should signify. And so when you are doing, these guys are going to see who the real best wrestler in the world is right now. But hey, focus on the World Heavyweight Championship. Like, whoever holds your title should be the best wrestler in the world. And I don't care about, oh, well, this guy's the best technical. No. You can come up with a better story than that. Because whoever holds that championship, I feel like, should be considered the best wrestler in the world. So right now, in the AEW world, Samoa Joe is the best wrestler in the world. I don't care what Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay do, even if that match ends up being amazing. And then the final segment, Samoa Joe and Swerve Strickland. Those guys don't miss. Their promos leading into it were really good. Swerve continues to feel like an absolute superstar. He has obviously buffed up for this run toward the World Heavyweight Championship. And then you get Samoa Joe getting the leg up on him, getting into Sunday. So, look, I think Sunday's show is going to be absolutely incredible. That's going to do it for the show today. We are going to break down AEW Dynasty. Forgot the show for a second. Coming up on tomorrow's show. It's a Fightin' Friday, so we're going to look at that, and we're going to look at the fights to make coming out of UFC 300. So it should be a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. As always, find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK, and you can email this show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. I am out. Talk to you guys later. Have a good one.
Save big money at Menards. never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a Truebolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes, on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.